Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since silver, and you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I welcome back divorce coach Emma Heppenstall, where we continue to discuss divorce. Emma, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Hey Gavin, good to be here again. Love to see you.
Good to have you back. Just remind us a bit about your background again and how you got to where you are today. I think our listeners would, you know, love to hear that.
So I've been divorce coaching for nearly a decade. My background is in law. So I was a lawyer for nearly a decade. Well, just over a decade, actually, when I think about it. And then I became a family mediator. And I'm very passionate about family mediation. And if you're thinking about divorce, consider family mediation. I'm sure Gavin will talk about that at some point, maybe not today, but another time. And it was when I was mediating that I began to realise that lots of women particularly are quite disenfranchised when it comes to divorce and understanding the process and feeling like they don't know what the numbers are in their financial relationship with their partner. And that's when I started divorce coaching to help women particularly, although I do coach men, understand the divorce process and get them ready for what can be a really difficult process, not just emotionally, but in terms of looking at numbers and money and working out what's going to happen with the children and letting go of past hurts and all of those things. Because the easier we get through the divorce process, the sooner we can move on to a new life.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you've got a wealth of experience in that area because of your background, you know. Why is it important to understand the type of relationship that you're in before you divorce?
Well, it's a really interesting question, Gavin, because so many people get this wrong. And when you get it wrong, for all good reasons, you can end up in a bit of a pickle. So in my experience, lots of people who are in a high conflict situation don't realise it because they watch too many soap operas and they think they know what a high conflict relationship is. It's lots of screaming and shouting. There may be some physical abuse. And if you're not in that situation, you think, oh, well, that's not me. Or they say, like my client Sarah, whose husband was difficult, but she came to the divorce process believing that even though he was a difficult person, that for the sake of the family and their children and the length of time they'd been married, that he would be reasonable and rational throughout the process. So she didn't envisage any difficulties, even though she recognized that he could be a tricky character. And she got it so wrong. And her divorce went on for over 3 years. They ended up going to final hearing. The final hearing was in her favor. The husband didn't like it. He appealed and she eventually settled. But she was totally blindsided by his behavior because she thought that he wouldn't behave that way. So it cost her a lot more money. It had a real impact on her mental health because she was absolutely devastated that this person that she always knew was, you know, a bit moody and could throw tantrums, but when it came to the family, that he'd be fine, but he wasn't. And if she had accepted earlier that actually there were so many red flags there that their divorce was going to be tricky from the get-go, she might have made different decisions. She might not have, but she's kind of denied herself the opportunity because she believed that everything was going to be okay when it wasn't. And so that's why it's really important to be honest with yourself about the situation that you are in. Just crossing your fingers and hoping for the best isn't really the way to go, because it's going to cost you a lot more money, it's going to take you a lot more time, and have a detrimental impact on your mental health. Whereas if you can sit back and go, do you know what, I don't think this is going to be easy, I think we might struggle, then you can put some plans in place, you can take care of yourself a bit better, you can ensure that you get the right legal and financial support, possibly earlier on in the process, to protect yourself. And if you have a plan, then you feel more in control, so that you get to maneuver the process a bit more rather than letting somebody who's difficult maneuver you.
It sounds like you only really get to know the partner when going through the divorce process, because people change as well, isn't it? And they might have external people around them as well saying, "Oh, why don't you do this and why don't you do that?" And it sounds honestly like it's horrible, you know, it's awful. And it went on for 3 years, so divorces can go on for quite a while by the sound of it.
Oh yes. Now, fortunately, most divorces do not take that. So if there's anyone listening thinking, "Oh my goodness, that's going to be me," it may not be you. But what's important is to understand what you might be facing, because the sooner that you begin to take action in whatever way that might be, the sooner that you can get the right support. So let's remember, Gavin, most people who divorce do so reasonably amicably, do so reasonably cheaply and reasonably quickly. We only ever hear about the cases that where that doesn't happen. And people like me tend to only work with people who are not in that category. If you can sit down with your soon-to-be ex-partner, decide what you're going to do with all the assets that you have and what's going to happen to the children, you can do it fairly quickly and fairly cheaply and fairly simply. And if you can do that, it's brilliant. That is kind of the gold standard amicable divorce that we all kind of aspire to. But there are some people that that's never going to be their situation. And sometimes they make matters worse by trying to squeeze themselves into that position when it's just never going to happen. And that's where they waste time and money and often quite a bit of ground in the divorce process by not being realistic.
What's the shortest divorce that you've come across, and what's the longest divorce that you've come across?
So the longest is probably the easiest to say, was 4 years. And as I say, that is incredibly unusual. So under the new legislation, you can't divorce quicker than 26 weeks. So it's going to take you half a year, even if everything goes smoothly. For most people, it takes longer than that anyway, just because there's a lot to sort out. You've got to wait for the court process as much as anything. And even if you reach an agreement between the two of you, the court still has to sign off whatever agreement you make in relation to your assets, so your money and your property. And so you're beholden to a certain extent to the court and how quickly they can deal with your case. Even if you're putting to a judge, this is what we've decided, this is what we'd like to happen. So you're kind of in it for the long haul. And it's really important to remember that. So many women particularly will come to me saying, I just want it over with. I just want it done. And what's the quickest way that I can do this? I'll let go of this and that and the next thing just so it can be over. But actually, it's not going to work like that anyway, even if you want it to, because the minimum period it's going to take you is 26 weeks.
Gosh. Well, hopefully most, by the sound of things, it sounds like most divorces go through, you know, faster than the years and that kind of thing. You know?
Yes.
What happens when you misjudge your situation?
When you misjudge your situation, it's going to cost you more money because you may find yourself having to backtrack. You may find yourself having to try and uncover assets or make a claim for assets that have been dissipated, i.e. got rid of, hidden, given away, sold. It's going to take you longer. It's going to impact your confidence. So to get it right from the start, to get the right advice from the start, to whether that's from a lawyer, if you can afford it. And I always advocate, if you can afford to get legal advice, please do. Unfortunately, not everybody can afford to get legal advice. If you have any money and you can't afford to have a solicitor supporting you throughout the process, consider direct access barristers. It means you've got to do some of the legwork and the donkey work yourself, but they will help you and they'll represent you and they will do some of the really chewy legal bits in the middle for you and with you. Get financial advice. Go and see an independent financial advisor so they can explain to you what assets there are, if there's cash that can be invested, what kind of return that might give you, because the more knowledge you have, the more power you have over your own position in the divorce process, the more choices that you're able to make if you have the information. Now, many people come to me and they've just buried their head in the sand and they're too scared to look. So when I say, well, do you know what your asset base is? Well, not really. I think I do, but I'm not really sure. And if you don't really know, it's hard to know what there might be because you don't know what you don't know. So if there's anybody that's listening who might just be getting married, which is a brilliant thing to do, and, you know, a happy time in life, don't give up your financial independence in terms of the knowledge that you have. Even if you decide to share all your assets and have a joint bank account, that's absolutely fine. And even if you decide, if you're a woman listening to this, to be the stay-at-home parent or the husband, if you're going to be a stay-at-home dad, don't let your eyes wander away from the asset base. So understanding what money's coming in, where it's going, what investments you might be making, the values of property, what you're putting into pensions might be additionally, because when you don't have that information, it's terrifying.
Absolutely, it sounds it. How do you make peace with the truth of your situation when you're facing divorce?
Be kind to yourself. First and foremost, be absolutely kind to yourself. I've never met a woman who said, I knew that I would divorce. I've coached plenty of women who've said, I knew when I was getting married that I shouldn't be marrying them, but they didn't anticipate that they'd ever divorce. So there's still a lot of shame around a failed marriage. But actually, there's more failure in staying in a relationship that is unhealthy, possibly toxic, not good for your children, than just saying, do you know what? The decision I made is no longer relevant and valid for me now. It's not good for me. It's not good for my partner. It's certainly not good for my children because we're all unhappy. It's time to move forward. So be kind to yourself. Failure is only in your head.
And it sounds like, I think sometimes when things are going wrong, and it's not just about divorce, it's about everything really, this is when we have to kind of turn to gratitude and maybe journaling as well.
Absolutely.
You know, yes. Those kind of things.
You know, if you didn't marry your partner, you may not have the children that you have. You may not have the friendship circle that you've had because you've moved to a different area or you've moved to a new house and there's loads of people around you that you like. There's so many things to be grateful for. And focus on the good things that have come out of that marriage, however small they may be. And be grateful that you have choice. And often it doesn't feel like you have choice. When you feel like your back's against the wall because you don't know what money there may be, if you have been conditioned to believe that the money in the relationship doesn't belong to you, that's where you really need to do the work, because that's not what the law in this country says, that even if you did not earn the money, if you're married and that money came into the relationship through the course of your marriage, then it's a marital asset. So it's unlikely that you'll leave the marriage with nothing. Very unlikely. Now, there are certain circumstances where that does happen, but they're very few and far between. And we're talking really short-term marriages, no property, no children. So if you're sitting there thinking, you know, well, I've not earned any money and I've got a few children, one or up to three, four, five, it doesn't matter how many, they will be provided for through divorce. Now, it may be that your standard of living reduces, and that's an inevitable consequence of many divorces. But you have to look at the positives of that, and that is you're out of an unhappy situation, you get to start your life again, you get to rebuild. You get to be you.
The people that you've coached, how did they cope with the divorce process? And not necessarily, you know, just the support from you, but what did they do externally, like to try and help minimize the stress?
I tell everybody who works with me and anyone listening, make sure that your divorce does not become your be-all and end-all. And there are points in the process where it feels like that. All my clients say to me when they get to the middle of the process, divorce is like a full-time job. There is so much to do, so much paperwork to fill in, so many documents to find, so many things to think about that it can be overwhelming. So take time away from it. When you can, put it down, walk away. And I also say, nobody likes a baby bore. Nobody likes a divorce bore either. So when you go out with your friends, don't talk about your divorce all night. If you want to talk about it for 5 or 10 minutes, do so. And then talk about something else, something fun, something more interesting. Because you need to give yourself a break emotionally from it, because it does take so long. And if you're in a high conflict situation, it's going to take a lot longer than 26 weeks, probably a year and a half, maybe even 2 years. So if you're totally hyper-focused on it for all that time, you'll drive yourself around the bend. And here's the thing, you've already been in a difficult situation, being in that relationship where you may have been controlled, put down, you lack confidence. So now it's your opportunity to start doing things differently, because a new life is coming. And it's never too early to start that, those new behaviours.
Absolutely. We just got to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sema, thank you again for all the insights around information around divorce. Why is it important not to go down the rabbit holes about narcissism, and what can the consequences be?
So at the moment, narcissism is a huge buzzword, and there are groups all over the internet and articles everywhere and a lot of books about it. And here's the thing. It is a distraction, because if you are divorcing somebody who has a high conflict personality, it's difficult enough. And if you have been in a relationship with somebody who has controlled you emotionally, who's made it so that your self-esteem is on the floor, there's this tendency in you to want to understand and to research. And part of that is the bond, the trauma bond, because you may have been exposed to love bombing, and you may have been exposed to the love and the discard and all of those things, and the stonewalling and the silence, and you seek to understand what's happened to you. But whilst you're going down that rabbit hole, your high conflict partner's busy potentially hiding assets, moving money, changing jobs, making themselves redundant or homeless. A whole myriad of behaviours which will actually impact you financially. And so people who are in high conflict situations become obsessed about the situation because they need validation. And that's really understandable, because when you realise that what's happened to you isn't normal, but it has happened to other people, you want to congregate them and then you want to share that experience. But when it's at the detriment of actually moving forward, it holds you back and you end up going down rabbit holes while a whole ton of behaviours are going on in the background that you don't have your eyes on. Now, when it comes to the divorce process itself, and particularly the financial settlement, very rarely do the courts care about somebody's behaviour. So if you go to the court saying, well, I'm divorcing a narcissist, possibly the court won't understand. But even if it does, it won't actually care. So it's really important that you focus on your job, and that's getting yourself out of this situation as quickly as possible. If you think that you're divorcing a narcissist, act as if you're divorcing a narcissist. Because in reality, unless he or she gets a diagnosis, you'll never know. The chances of that happening is so slim. In over, well, just a decade of working in this industry, I've only worked with one woman whose husband was actually diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, because most narcissists don't put themselves forward for diagnosis. Labeling isn't helpful to you or anyone else. Talk about the behavior of the person. And if you decide, based on everything that you've read and that you understand, act as if they are, even if you don't have that diagnosis, which means that you keep your conversations what Bill Eady calls BIF. So that's brief, informative, friendly, and firm. And you can find Bill Eady's work on Amazon, on the internet, and he is an amazing gentleman who has researched and worked with high conflict personalities and families for probably 30 years. And so he talks about being BIF, brief, informative, friendly, and firm. It means not explaining, not getting into dialogues, not trying to justify, just keep things really factual. You need to understand the asset base for yourself. So don't rely on what's being told to you, because it may not be true. But equally, don't bother calling them out on every little lie that they tell you, because it's not actually going to help you. You keep your own confidence, you beaver away in the background, finding the information that you need. It needs to be done legally, by the way. You can't go and snoop into and hack into their emails or their bank accounts or anything like that, because that may be a criminal offence, and it's certainly not going to be admissible in a divorce court. Use a lawyer if you can. Don't focus on their perceived diagnosis, focus on what you can do for yourself to get yourself out of the situation.
Absolutely. It sounds like when coming across some cases, the person might have suspected narcissism. And it sounds like those procedures, those divorce procedures, can possibly be more tricky. Would that be the case?
They are definitely more tricky, because one of the fundamental principles of the divorce process in England and Wales is that of, and around the world, is that of disclosure, of showing your partner the assets that you have, the bank accounts, the savings, the investments, the properties, the interests in other companies and businesses, if you're a businessman or woman. And all of those things should be shared. And equally, you have to share your numbers with the other person. Now, the high conflict personality doesn't think, or the narcissist doesn't think, that the rules apply to them. Which is why I said earlier, before the ad break, you need to be clear when you get married of what the assets are all the way along. Because if 20 years down the line, you realize that you're married to somebody who's maybe narcissistic, they're not going to willingly come to the table and tell you everything that they've amassed during the course of your marriage. They'll probably come to you with a spreadsheet that's highly edited in their favor. And you, as the financially weaker spouse, has no idea how accurate that is. And yes, you can employ people to help you uncover the truth of the asset base, but it's very expensive, can be time consuming, and it's out of the financial reach of most people. So if you suspect that your husband or wife may be narcissistic, may be high conflict, even before you announce that you're thinking of leaving, find out as much information. So look on Rightmove, what's your house worth? Do you know what's outstanding on the mortgage? Are there redemption penalties? Have you seen your partner's latest P60? Have you seen their contracts of employment, if they get bonuses? When are they paid? Where's money being moved to? And look at if you can't access that information, look at your lifestyle. Does the lifestyle that your partner allows you to live reflect what they're telling you about what the assets are? So I once coached a woman who is now thankfully post-divorce and very happy. And her husband was an airline pilot. But he convinced her that they didn't have enough money for her to go and have her hair cut at a hairdresser's. Now, anybody not in that situation would go, well, hang on a minute. I don't actually know how much airline pilots get paid, but I'm guessing it's not a pittance. And getting your hair cut in a hair salon, it can be very expensive, but it doesn't have to be. Not to the stage where he was telling her that she had to nip round to the neighbours for a free haircut. But she was so entrenched in his financial world and his narrative about what money they had and didn't have that she had no idea that that was not normal. Now, it was fortunate for her that actually they didn't have a lot of cash because, unbeknownst to her, prior to the divorce, her husband was actually stashing a lot of money away in the pensions. Well, that benefited her in the end because she got a share of those pensions when the divorce was finalised. So he kind of shot himself in the foot. But you don't know what you don't know. And so it's about just stepping back and looking at your reality and going, well, hang on a minute. If we're living in a really big house and we have two or three foreign holidays a year, is it really true that we don't have any money? There's money somewhere, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to live this life. Now, it's also true that that money could be borrowed. And it did happen to a client of mine who lived in a very big house, who took very nice holidays. And when they started through the divorce process, her husband was just living on credit and she had no idea. And she ended up with virtually nothing. But she'd taken her eye off the ball. She had no idea that the house that they lived in was mortgaged to the hilt. She had no idea that the holidays that they went on was all borrowed money. She thought that was cash that they had. That's why it's so important to understand, even if you're happily married and you're listening to this and you go, well, that would never be me. We'd never get divorced and my partner's great. Just understand where you're at.
No, of course, that makes just to make sure, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
Why is it more important that you create as many options in your divorce as possible?
Options give you choice. So sometimes I work with people and they have no choice but to go through the process to its absolute finality, to final hearing and sometimes beyond, because there's very little choice. Other people who are a bit more wealthy have the option to say, well, do you know what? I'm in this high conflict situation. I know that maybe he's not offering me half of the assets that I'm entitled to, but do you know what? I don't have to stay and in this process to argue about them if I choose not to. And that's not saying that anyone should walk away with less than they're entitled to. But when you understand the different options, you have choice to step away if you choose to. Sometimes, even if you're not in the position to walk away, not in its entirety, but you're not in a position to walk away from a substantial sum of money. Sometimes there are different options within a realm of possibilities. So there may be an opportunity for you to have a house. There may be an opportunity for you to have a house with a mortgage and some cash that you can invest. There may be an opportunity for you to take a greater share of pension if you don't need cash right now. Or you may decide that the property is going to be sold and you're not going to buy a property right now because you're going to choose something else. So if you understand your own position, you understand what assets there are, you understand yourself, what's right for you, where you want to be on the other side of the divorce process, you then have a choice as to how long you stay in the process to a degree, not entirely, obviously, because the other person is important. But you can walk away if you can afford to and you choose to. You can stay if you want to. And you can be more creative with the settlements that you and your partner eventually come to. But you don't have to necessarily split everything 50-50 straight down the middle and that's how it's going to be. That's just a starting point. But the more you understand about the assets and the more you understand about how you want to live in the future, the more creative you can be. And then the more likely you are, not necessarily in a high conflict situation, but in an ordinary situation, to reach an agreement that both of you can live with.
Absolutely. Will someone ever be able to change their partner's behaviour?
No, you will never be able to change your partner's behaviour, because whether it's a high conflict situation or just a behaviour that's irritating, that partner will only change if they A, want to, and B, they're capable of it. Now, high conflict behaviours and those with personality disorders particularly, so narcissism, very, very difficult to treat, almost impossible. Research has shown that people with a narcissistic personality disorder can only maintain a change in behaviour for as long as they're in therapy. So if they consent and go to therapy forever, great, you might see some behaviour change. But the minute that behaviour, that therapy stops, the behaviours will return to how they were before. So if you're staying in the relationship hoping that their behaviours will change, please understand that they probably won't. Now, that doesn't mean you have to leave. If you choose to stay, that's fine. But choose to stay knowing that your job is to accept that behavior and to keep yourself as safe as possible, both physically, financially, and emotionally. But if you're staying because you're just hoping that this next person is going to be able to help them, if they haven't changed now, they're highly unlikely to ever change in the future.
Yeah. And unfortunately, sometimes the person keeps coming back and saying, oh, you know, let's, and then they don't, they kind of backtrack on what they might have said. Not everybody's like that, but some people are like that. Do you know what I mean? And it makes things probably more complex, you know?
Yes, because if you've got, if you're trauma bonded to your partner over a period of often years, when they throw you that sort of carrot that you think, oh, they're going to change, they've said, you know, they've cried and they've said, I'm sorry, and I'm going to go, I found this new therapist and they're brilliant and I'm going to go. Well, they might do for a few weeks, but the minute that therapist gets anywhere near the root cause of what causes their behaviour to be that way, they will just shut down, back out, and withdraw from the therapy. And you as the partner will then be on a spiral down into previous behaviours. And that's the reality. And it's sad. And you'll often have to grieve the loss of the relationship you hoped you'd have. But the sooner that you begin to accept that, the sooner that you can begin to make healthier choices for you. Because what I often find is women who are married to high conflict individuals, often codependency is a huge thing, and they find themselves almost doing the divorce for the benefit of their partner because they can't stop trying to support them. But the thing is, the high conflict personality isn't doing the same for them. So you have to be on team you, as hard as that is, because team you is what is going to get you through, because your high conflict partner is not going to be putting you first because they don't have that capacity. They couldn't do it in the marriage, and they're certainly not going to do it for you during the divorce.
Gosh, it sounds awful, doesn't it? You know, what people unfortunately need to go through, you know. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So Emma, thank you for so much more insightful information into supporting people with that are going through the divorce process. How do children cope with the high conflict parent?
Children high conflict parents is a really difficult subject, Gavin, because they're usually caught in the crossfire. High conflict personalities have one view of how their children should be parented, and the other parent will have a different view. So you've got some children caught in the middle. And it's really discombobulating for them because they love often both parents, and they don't know who to please or when to please them. Or if you have a codependent tendency, which many partners of high conflict personalities have, the children begin to learn that very young. So then they start placating the high conflict personality by saying yes to them when they want to say no, because they don't want to upset them. They don't want them to feel let down, and they don't want to be rejected by that high conflict personality as they've seen their other parent be. So it's really, really difficult. What needs to happen where possible is to have support for your children that's independent from you, because as the partner of a high conflict personality, you're doing a lot of work just to keep yourself safe. And you're also extending yourself trying to keep your children safe. And the best people often to keep them safe isn't you, because you're too involved and too enmeshed in the situation. And actually getting children their own therapist is ideal, if you can. And school can often be a great place to start. When the children have got an outlet, they're able to say what's really going on and how they feel without fear of upsetting you. And you've already got enough on your plate. What you can do as a parent is reinforce your own boundaries with your children so that your children learn how important boundaries are. It's easy to give in to them because you want to protect them and you want to give them an easier life, particularly if their high conflict personality parent is really rigid and strict and difficult. Resist that urge to be the soft parent, because actually you still need to have boundaries, healthy boundaries, about what's right and okay in your world and what isn't. And particularly around how your children speak to you. So I often find that children who have a high conflict parent begin to speak to their non-high conflict parent in the ways that their high conflict parent does, calling them stupid, ugly, fat, I don't need to listen to you, really poor behavior. And there's this part of you that knows that comes, that's the other parent speaking, and you want to make excuses, but you've already been making excuses for your partner for God knows how many years. And that's why it's gone on for so long. So it's really important to pick up your children that that behavior is not okay. And that in our house, we don't speak to each other that way. And the consequences of that are that I feel sad, I feel upset, I feel hurt. And so we speak to each other nicely. Boundaries make children feel safe. So although there may well be, and there often is with my clients' children anyway, a backlash against that, and they want to say, well, I want to go and spend my time with the other parent because they let me do things, they let me speak to them in different ways. Keeping those boundaries safe, role modeling positive parenting all the time, even when it's difficult, and trying to find role models of the parent, of the high conflict parent themselves. So if it's a husband, finding other men in your life that are positive role models, or if it's a woman, other women in your life that are positive role models, so that your children get to see you interacting with those people and how they interact with other people and how they interact with the children. So they get a sense of what is normal and healthy relationship and what isn't. Encourage your children's time with other children and other families so they get to see a different relationship dynamic. Because if your children have only ever seen a toxic family relationship, they don't actually know that that's toxic and that that isn't actually the way that other people behave. So giving them that freedom to experience what other relationships are like is really important.
How can you minimize litigation costs with a high conflict personality?
The high conflict personality will use litigation costs as a tactic really soon, usually into the divorce, because they want to wear you down. They want you to run out of money, because if you run out of money in their head, that means you've got to stop, quote, fighting. And therefore, the high conflict personality will get their way. So the more work that you can do behind the scenes up front to understand what the asset base is, to understand what your future income need might be, so you get a sense of where what I call the red line is, so what you absolutely can't walk away from, what you could walk away from, and actually your best case scenario, so i.e. having those options if there are any, the more money that you will save. So, for example, nobody these days needs to hire a lawyer to fill in the divorce application. It'll take you 15 minutes online. And if you can read English, And you can use a computer, you can apply for divorce on your own without a lawyer. Now, if you want to get a lawyer to do that for you, by all means do so, but it's going to cost you money and it's money that you don't need to spend. If you have some kind of idea about the asset base, if you think that you want to explore whether mediation may or may not be suitable, and it's not suitable for everybody, but it might be, then do some research before you spend money on a lawyer, so that at least when you're having a conversation with a lawyer, you can tell them whether or not you think mediation is going to work for you and how it might work for you. You might even want to speak to a mediator. There are plenty of mediators out there that will work with high conflict couples, particularly since COVID, because we now do sessions on Zoom and things like that, so you're not physically in the same space. Hybrid mediation is more expensive up front, but can save you a lot of money, because that's when you're mediating with the help of your lawyers in real time. So that can close down loopholes, because high conflict personalities want to drag out a process. They want to wear you down financially. They want you to get into email ping pong between lawyers, because you're paying £25-30 a letter for those emails, and possibly more, and it's easy to rack up hundreds of pounds worth of lawyer debt. And if your high conflict partner does not want to engage, they'll just ignore them, even though both the lawyers are ping-ponging emails, nothing happens. And it's easy to run up thousands of pounds of debt to your lawyers every month and get nowhere. So don't let things slide. Often people are frightened of issuing Form A, and Form A is the form that takes matters to court. But what most people don't realise is sometimes having Form A issued and the court as a backstop with a high conflict personality is absolutely the right thing, and it should be done sooner rather than later, because it stops the high conflict personality from allowing the lawyers to do email ping pong and go, oh, I'm sending you a letter, you've got 28 days to respond, you've got another 28 days to respond, particularly if you are, as a person, are reliant financially on that other person for living costs and they're restricting them. You can't afford to let the divorce time frame go on and on. Issue Form A, then the court is seized of the divorce, the financial remedy. It doesn't mean you can't negotiate, doesn't mean you can't have lawyers writing lessons, doesn't mean you can't mediate, do hybrid mediation, collaborative law, you can arbitrate, you can do all of those things to keep it away from the judges. But you've got the court in the background saying to the high conflict personality, there are now timescales that you need to send in documentation, or you might face costs. You need to send this information. You need to engage in the process. If you just go, oh, but I'm too scared and I'll just let it slide, then time will go on. And the high conflict personality, if they're moving assets, they want time to go on. The disclosure process, as a general rule, only goes back 12 months. So if the high conflict personality can delay and delay and delay, then they can get rid of assets that are difficult to trace because more than 12 months has passed. Now, it is possible to ask a court to go back further, but you need to get permission, and that can be expensive, and it's not always granted. So if you're thinking, I think my relationship's over, by all means, try with a letter from a lawyer, if you can afford it, to see if they'll come to the negotiation table. But please do not wait months and months and months, because that's a red flag that your soon-to-be ex-partner is in the background moving assets so they're out of your reach.
Emma, thank you so much for today. That's been really insightful as always. Where can people find you if they need to, like, maybe they want to link in with you or get some advice or use your services?
Gavin, they can find me on my website. That's emmaheptonstall.com. They can find me on LinkedIn. They can find me on Instagram at Divorce Alchemy. And if they go on Amazon, they can buy my book, How to Be a Lady Who Leaves, The Ultimate Guide to Getting Divorce Ready. And guys, you can read it too. You can get it on Audible so nobody knows you're reading it, because divorce advice, Gavin, is the same for men as it is for women.
Brilliant. Thank you again so much. Much appreciate all that information. Okay.
Great to chat with you, Gavin.
Good to chat to you too. And thank you to our listeners. You know you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.